What's up, guys? This week's episode is a really special one. It was initially only intended to air on Sirius XM, and so each month I do a special episode for Sirius that doesn't get released on iTunes. And if you're interested in listening to the show on Sirius XM so you can get it, you know, a couple weeks sooner and get the special bonus episodes, you can listen for free through the Sirius XM app. It's on She's So Funny. It airs every Thursday at noon and 8 p.m. Eastern, and then the special episodes air on special dates. So this one I made for Women's History Month, and I have on Caitlin Bailey, who's a sex workers' rights advocate, and Liz Winstead, who is a women's reproductive rights advocate. And they're brilliant, they're so funny and wonderful, and we talk about the intersection of women's rights and sex workers' rights and reproductive rights. And it's a really great conversation. And in light of, you know, recent news with the Supreme Court looking to overturn Roe v. Wade, I wanted to air this for you guys. It's not, you know, a technical episode. It's not some hard-hitting journalism, like a 60 Minutes type of thing, but it is interesting. And Liz and Caitlin are both, they're both comedians, and they're both experts in their field. And I wanted to give this to you guys. So here you go. Hello and welcome to a very special episode of Long Story Long. I'm your host, Lisa Curry. Today's episode is for Women's History Month, and it's only available right here on Sirius XM's She's So Funny. I have two incredible guests for you today. First up is Liz Winstead. She's a comedian and founder of the organization Abortion Access Front. And next up is Caitlin Bailey. She is a comedian and host of the Oldest Profession podcast. So between the two of them, we will be talking about the intersection between abortion rights and sex workers' rights. And guess what? Things are looking pretty bleak. But we had a lot of fun with this conversation, and I certainly learned it a lot. And I think you might as well. Here you are. Enjoy. Hey, how are you guys?
Good in there.
Good, good. So I have Caitlin Bailey and Liz Winstead here today. And both of you, I feel like I botch introductions so much. It's so I do 1,000 takes when I do the intro separately. I admire both of your work, and Sirius asked me to do a Women's History Month podcast, and I was like, you know what? We're gonna do funny women that are doing good shit that are like, it feels like a fuck you to men. I mean, it shouldn't be, but like it does kind of. Would you each just say really quickly, like succinctly, I guess, what you do for the audience?
Yeah, sure. I'll open. So, you know, I'm Caitlin. I spent many years working as a stand-up comic. And then I started the podcast, The Oldest Profession, which does a deep dive into sex worker history every episode. And that led me down this primrose path where I worked as the founding director of communications for Decriminalized Sex Work, a national advocacy organization. And after spending 2 years talking to legislators about why, you know, criminalizing, you know, people that engage in The Oldest Profession is like not helpful most of the time.
The Oldest Profession being...
Oh yeah, sex work, of course. The exchange of erotic labor for money and other things you need. It became really clear to me that we aren't going to get any good policy, and we're not going to be able to sustain any legislative victories without really investing in culture change. And so I founded Old Pros, where we create the conditions to change the status of sex workers in society through the power of proximity in media, storytelling, and networks. And that's
what I love. That I
feel very much like I am walking in the footsteps, and you know, of Liz, who I'm a huge fan of. So
yeah,
a real honor to be here.
Well, I'm excited to be here too. I'm Liz. I'm a comedian and a writer and a producer, and I try to use my comedy to make change, especially in areas that have been ignored, when even in spaces that are supposedly progressive, issues around abortion specifically are ignored. and aren't talked about and are marginalized and wedged because men seem to think that if it doesn't happen to them, then it's not an experience that is worth having. And they don't understand its relationship to humanity and the greater good and also being a completely free human in our society. And so I specifically went from just doing, I still do political satire and stand up on broader terms, but I do have an organization called Abortion Access Front that puts abortion at the forefront of, you know, very much what Caitlin was talking about, culture change. What are we going to do around abortion? And I think that for years, second wave feminism has done a real disservice around sex work, especially. And it is part of our organization, which is why I'm really excited to be here, is that I feel like the abortion rights movement has a lot to learn from the sex workers movement around what's at stake, what is being violated on both fronts. When you look at pieces of legislation that most people have never heard of that I hope we get into, like Sessa Foster and FOSTA and other things that, you know, when they start deciding that a body is property of anyone other than the person who lives in the walls of that skin, those things go profoundly south very quickly. And so it's what other, it because it takes away your humanity. And and literally we classify you as chattel. Yeah. And so all of these things intersect. So that's what I do.
It's,
I
don't know. It's horrifying. And I feel like to that point about legislating people's bodies, it, regardless of what people think of Kamala Harris, there was that when she was that not trial, I'm missing the word, but she made the really great point a while back of like, you know, she asked a congressman, like, can you think of any laws that regulate men's bodies specifically? And he was just like fumbling and like, and it's like, yeah, there are none. Like what are, and it feels like it's rooted in this like hatred for women and this, like, it feels like a very white religious thing to me. And I don't want, you know, it's not just white people, but it feels like it's overwhelmingly like this white Christian thing.
I don't want you to gaslight yourself. I think that like everything that you're saying is very well documented, like in history, right? You know, people were saying the quiet part out loud, and both the history of the criminalization of abortion and the criminalization of prostitution have roots in the eugenics movement here in the US, right?
Yes.
Scientific racism, the, you know, like Jim Crow, this period in the 19th century and the quote unquote progressive era, right? Where we criminalized abortion, alcohol, and prostitution all at the same time. And it was quote unquote clean up our cities from whom immigrants,
like, don't take away my hobbies,
right? So like I'm not gonna let you gaslight yourself here, Lisa. You're hitting the nail on the head. The legislators that passed these, so you know, the Comstock laws of the 1860s, the white slave law of 1910, all of this was done for explicitly racist, very sexist reasons.
Empowerment reasons, you know, sexist. And also economic, right?
Yep.
You know, abortions used to just be done by midwives and with herbs, and like, you know, people would just do menstrual extractions, and like shit was just happening. And, you know, the medical community found out there was money to be made on abortions. And all of a sudden things happened where it needed to be put in the hands of doctors so that, you know, doctors could make money at it. And that's also like a part of it too. You know, it's all interconnected, but at the root of it, it's everything that you just said.
Yeah.
It's all connected.
It's so frustrating. And like Liz and I were just talking a couple of days ago on the same podcast about how language is such a big deal. And even though I'm in support of, you know, both of what both of you do and like sex workers' rights and reproductive rights, I find myself like not having the right language a lot of times, because I think that, you know, like I'm from a really Catholic family where you can't talk about any of this stuff. You can't say the word abortion. You can't say the word sex work or the phrase sex work. People cringe and they're like, they're so freaked out by it.
I mean, we live in a society, and like we as comics are working in a culture where period jokes are dirty, but like Nazi stuff is fine. You know what I mean? Like it's not.
Rape jokes are totally on the table though forever.
We have criminalized, we have, I'm searching for the word, but we have made women's bodies themselves, pornographic, right? We've conflated, and you know, to your point about language, and I was really excited to see you know, like gender inclusive language, like all kinds of people have engaged in all kinds of sex work, right? People of all genders participate in it, and all, you know, people of all genders, well, people with uteruses, right, get abortions. And the issue of access to safe and legal abortion, or the, or reproductive justice, access to birth control, and access to like childcare and early development, really, you know, recognizing the full spectrum of people's reproductive choices is something that benefits people of all genders. But you're absolutely right that this is like squarely centered at and grounded in this visceral hatred of women, like this deep misogyny.
I remember you had, Caitlin, you had said to me years ago, you were like, you know, a lot of people think it's degrading to trade sex for money, but I think it's degrading to clean up shit in a Starbucks bathroom for $15 an hour. And I was like, oh, I've literally done that. I've literally cleaned up human feces. And I was like, it felt like it cracked my mind open. And I was like, the number of times I've gone on dates, like just cringy dates, and I'm like, well, at least I got a dinner out of this. I'm like, what the fuck is the difference?
You'd be really underpaid. Absolutely.
And, you know, wide swath movements, you know, as you're watching people protest, like teaching about the historical racism in our country, because it makes white children feel uncomfortable. You know, when you look about, I don't want to wear a mask because it makes me uncomfortable. You know, all of this comes down to any kind of freedom that allows any person to say no to the power structure has to be destroyed. You know, controlling your own sexuality, whether you want it, whatever you want to do with your body, what do you want to do with it for money, whatever you want to do. If there is a chance that there would be rejection by a white guy or males in general, in any way, shape or form, that you would have control over that, that they're going to try to destroy it.
It's the power, and it, you know, you're absolutely right. It's the power of the exploiter, which I think you can really draw a straight line to the power of the slaveholder, right? Like when people talk about states' rights and they talk about the right to literally own other people, I see those threads in our conversation about like the great resignation, right? And like business owners are up in arms over the fact that their employees have this newfound ability to negotiate. And I think you're absolutely right. It's tied to, you know, people who really do have full access to make reproductive choices are less exploitable, right? People that don't fear being arrested, right, for engaging in sex work, right, are less exploitable. And if we're actually interested in reducing violence and exploitation, then we should be expanding rights and resources, not dreaming up more things to criminalize or censor.
Especially in this bullshit, like forever bullshit conversation that we have had around Keynesian economy and all of this shit about bootstraps and about the marketplace of ideas, and those with the you know, who are just the most skilled should be the most rewarded. Mm-hmm. That's the other piece, is that this skating on your garbage mediocrity is like every single person who excels is holding up a mirror to that mediocrity. And all of a sudden, that is just not going to be acceptable. And so it's all like you set up an economic system where you said all this bullshit about excellence and about rewarding those who could do the best. Then when we start emerging like motherfuckers because we're the best, showing these white dudes that you are just so skating on your averageness, then all of a sudden the rules change.
I am so grateful for my experience as a sex worker to sort of like show me the lie of meritocracy, right? Like rich dudes are not smart. That's not, you know, like that's
there's no correlation.
Yeah, there's no zero correlation between the accumulation of financial resources and like literally anything. So I knew that as a sex worker, and it's really come in handy as a political fundraiser.
I mean, it's true. Some of it's damn luck, some of it's family, some of it's whatever, but like, oh my God.
I love it so much. And like back where you were saying also, Caitlin, about states' rights, I think that that's obviously, that's a lot of what's happening with sex workers' rights and with reproductive rights right now, where it's like, it's driving me out of my mind that the federal government's kind of like, yeah, well, I mean, what can we do? I mean, that's Texas. Texas is going to be Texas. It's like, oh, do you not care about them during like a, you know, a climate crisis? Or
No,
it's only states' rights when it's meant to control people and mm-hmm. take things away from individual people. Then it's like, oh, well, you know, we can't possibly tell them what to do. It's like, fuck.
It's a, I mean, you know, I came up in the generation after Roe, right? And started fighting for abortion access. I grew up in North Carolina under the Bush administration's abstinence-only education, right? So I feel like I saw this train coming, right? Mm-hmm. And I started volunteering for Planned Parenthood at 15, right? I spent, you know, like almost a decade. And I brushed up against, I felt like, you know, no offense to Planned Parenthood, which was like absolutely doing their best, but you nailed it, Liz, when you talked about the second wave feminism sort of playing polite politics, right? Sort of not using the word abortion, spending time trying to navigate this throughway of like, you know, a moving goalpost, right? Where we should have spent decades fighting for, this is the full human rights spectrum and destigmatizing abortion, right? And instead we were fighting for pieces of funding. And I think that, you know, we've really demonstrated the weakness of that. Because I think we're gonna lose Roe. And I think we have already lost and will continue to lose access to safe and legal abortion at an absolutely alarming pace throughout the country.
Yeah, I mean, most of the states in America aren't living under the tenets of Roe v. Wade, you know? Yep. And so when we look at how we have learned to talk about sex work, abortion, all of it, the language that has been handed to people has been handed by those who oppose both things. And so you are, myself included, defaulting to terrible things, calling people who want to take away my rights pro-life, like doing that gross. For years, gross. You know, they bomb abortion clinics. They've killed my friends. Like, you're not pro-life. You know, you fight for nothing that is alive, that's actually living outside of a womb. Mm-hmm. You have never lifted a finger for. You know, when we have caveats around, you know, oh, I'm not pro-abortion. No one's pro-abortion. Like, I am. Yeah. 100% yeah. pro-abortion. 100%. Yeah.
Thank God I had an abortion.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the morality around what it means to have abortion and provide abortion and all of that needs to be reinserted into the conversation. And just like sex work, mm-hmm. it is a moral choice that someone may make in their lifetime for work or, you know, to terminate a pregnancy. Like, who's anyone to decide any of this? I mean, I really don't understand. And also our movement has sadly, another place where we should take a page and hopefully we will and do more intersectional work with sex workers is there is no ACT UP in the reproductive health rights and justice movement. There's people that are working on great stuff, you mm-hmm. know, whether it's abortion funding, abortion provision, legislation, whether it's all the things around reproductive justice, you know, maternal mortality, making sure there's healthy families, environmental justice that ties in, how you raise your kids. But there is not, until my organization, which is really going to lean in hard as we move forward into that direct action in the streets, taking on, not just having a flash mob where it's safe, taking on anti-abortion extremists mm-hmm. at their churches, at their jobs, you know, because we have to confront the message that is happening with a different message mm-hmm. in the moment, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. I mean, I remember, you know, like sort of feeling, you know, like having a weird feeling when I heard Hillary Clinton talk about abortion as like safe, legal, and rare, right? It seemed to like give so much over to the shame and stigma, which is exactly what silences all of these stories mm-hmm. that could be normalizing abortion, right? Like, I had an abortion at like 25, 26, and that decision has paved the way for all of the other opportunities that I've had, right? And I mean, I feel like we don't talk about it. I was raised to believe that, you know, like before I had that experience, that it was always this tragedy, right? I remember saying to legislators before my own experience of like, nobody takes this issue lightly. No, nobody does this without really wrestling with their decision. Like, as soon as I saw the pregnancy test, I was like, oh, thank God I have access.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
I think there's also this like weirdo narrative. Or at least like I'm from the Midwest and I'm from Indiana and it's very,
problematic.
Problematic. I mean, we gave the world Mike Pence. I'm so sorry.
And Amy Coney Barrett. I'm not letting you off the hook with Jesus the exports Christ, yes. that you have given us.
just the worst. We should wall off the state and just keep everyone there. But there's like also this myth of like, you know, any woman that supports abortion rights is just having all these abortions. And they just like, I'm like, I know.
Grounded in horror phobia.
So many women that, first of all, if I got pregnant right now, I would immediately be having an abortion because I want to have a life to myself. But I'm like, there's so many women in my family that are pro-abortion that got pregnant and had kids, or got pregnant and, you know, had a kid and then had an abortion later or whatever. And it's like, you should be able to decide how much you can handle with your life. And this idea also that like, oh, well, if you're not ready for kids, you shouldn't have sex is like, absolutely what? Fuck yourself.
Yeah. But also I'm going to say, I'm just going to go out on the Liz Winstead playground, which I live is when people say, but all these people who are having all these abortions, I'm like, and so what?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't care because, and that's part of the language and the relationship to abortion that we have all developed because we didn't talk about it.
Right.
Because what I like to say to people is, if you say you are pro-choice and you support abortion, and if you believe the tenets that abortion isn't harmful to your mental health, does not cause breast cancer, does not screw with your fertility in any way, then why shouldn't somebody have as many abortions as they want? Now, what I would say is, I want you to not get STDs. So think about condoms, you know, as just like a way to be smart, because, you know, you just don't want to
take care of yourself.
Because that's that. But having abortions is separate from that.
Yeah.
And so like, that's an extreme thing right now in society for me to say, but I don't care. I say it anyway, but like people would view that as an extreme view.
I'm with you. And I think it's interesting because I think that the stigma around sex work and the stigma around abortion really brush up against similar things here, right? Like I hear a lot of like, nobody's pro prostitution. It's like, I had a pretty good time. Yeah. You know, like that, but
I wish I had the nerve.
On the other hand, just with prostitution and also with abortion, I don't want anyone engaging in this work that doesn't want to, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want anyone bullied into an abortion that they don't want, either by an abusive partner or, right, the violent reality of being in poverty, right, in this banana pants system that we've created. And if you want both fewer people who don't want to be engaging in prostitution doing that work, and you want fewer abortions from people who would really rather, you know, have their babies, right, where it is a personal tragedy for them, then you need to invest in the same things. We need healthcare, right? We need childcare. We need housing. We need a stronger social safety support net so that we can make people less vulnerable to violence and exploitation, which is what an actually pro-life you know, committee, organization, policy, or whatever would be pursuing. But instead, we're tearing down things that might help. And I think that this is really grounded in this sort of like racist whorephobia, right? We don't want to help those dirty whores, right? We don't want to help them get things that they might need to make their lives better. You know, we want to punish them.
And I would even take it one step further to say all of that, plus educate. There are friends of mine who work in Nebraska, who, you know, in states that don't allow sex education,
what a mess.
There were literally young women who are like 13 and 14 years old who came to them pregnant and didn't know why they were pregnant.
Oh my God.
They did not know what happened to them. Was what led you to pregnancy.
That is heartbreaking.
So the lack of education and the lack of access to birth control and literally where you can get it or even knowing about it. Mm-hmm. If there is somebody who has to have repeated abortions because information is not available to them to know differently, I ask you, does that person seem ready to parent?
Right.
You know, like you don't even invest in them being good at parenting. You just insist they should be a parent.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I just feel like, and people act like there's all this access around and availability around mm-hmm. and computers and Google and learning and birth control vending machines and whatever garbage they think is the world that exists for people to live like healthy, live as healthy sexual beings. Like, mm-hmm. you know, and that's the other thing. We don't allow women and just femmes. We'll just talk about women and femmes right now, just in general. Sure. Like, mm-hmm.
It's Women's History Month.
Yeah, yes. It's Women's History Month. To be straight up sexual beings and be okay with that. Right. When you have all this daddy's little girl shit, and have you seen the so mountains gross. Of prom pictures of like horrible men with guns?
Yeah, like, with like right a shirt that says like, "Stay away from my daughter." I've got a gun. Or it's like,
yeah.
So and gross.
Exactly. You know, and it's just like, and also like I'm going to say something really controversial. Maybe not. I don't
Please
know.
Please do. Always.
But I'm the youngest of five kids in my family. I don't have kids. My sisters all have kids. And I know for me as a person, when I was in that space of my sexual awakening was converging with my still feeling the need to be like parented mm-hmm. and, you know, vulnerable. My mom wasn't the person that I wanted to go to and to talk about like sexy things. And so my sisters who were like hip moms and great, you know, they're like, hey, you know, will you take my kids to get birth control or whatever? I was like, yeah, of course. And they're like, but you know, they really can talk to me about everything. And I go, can they, should they? Like, has your daughter ever walked out of a dressing room and said, is this a fuckable shirt? Like if they haven't, then you got to make sure that they're talking. They have people in their lives who they can like have those conversations with to be like, yeah, you look super fuckable in that. Are you loaded up? Do you have a plan B in your purse? Do you have a condom? Like what's going on? Right. And it's like hard for liberal moms, you know, and people who think they're super progressives to like realize you might not be the mm-hmm. everything, and nor should you be, just like your partner shouldn't be your everything. Yeah. There should be no everything.
Except there should be no everything.
Should be your own everything. Yeah.
I've always found it deeply ironic that people that, you know, they see people that are comfortable in their own sexuality as like perverts and they spend all of their time obsessing over other people's sexuality and sex mm-hmm. lives. And I'm like, who's the pervert here? Like, why are you worried about who I'm fucking or how many people I'm fucking or whatever? Like, why are you thinking about me fucking?
Yeah.
I mean, that's been true for everyone, ever, right? You know, like it's so funny. Anthony Comstock, who wrote the initial obscenity laws, right? That initially criminalized prostitution and then conflate, like he's the person that arrested Margaret Sanger, right? And so he had like a whole dedicated house to just the porn that he'd collected over his decades. It's always been these dudes. Right.
But
he served in the Civil War. Right. And he came out of the, you know, one of the bloodiest wars in American history, fought over the literal institution of slavery and was like, the real problem in American society is there's too much free access to hand drawn titties. That is the biggest emergency facing America. We have to crack down.
Yeah. I'm going to take away the inkwells.
This is before photography. Yes. Like, this is not okay. People are projecting their nonsense and we punish women for their desire, right? We punish women for their ambition, right? And like the grounding philosophical foundation of like, I need to bring a gun to my prom date or any, you know, like as a father, right? Is that my daughter is my property, right? And I have to protect her value, right? From preventing
which is her virginity.
Her virginity, exactly. And it's like, this is something that I struggle. My mom took me to like abortion rallies, right? Like I was raised in a really progressive, like forward thinking house. And she was a great help to me when I needed mine, but she was still afraid of me looking like a little slut in high school, you know? And like there, that stuff goes deep. Goes really,
oh my God,
really deep.
So deep. How about too, like those, when you pledge your virginity to your dad at a ceremony.
Horrifying. Horrifying.
Yeah.
Like
a
lot of people don't know this exists, but you literally go to a daddy-daughter dance and he slips a ring on your finger. And then of course you immediately go fuck your boyfriend after the dance.
Yeah.
But it's like, that is some creepy.
It makes my stomach turn.
Yes. Right? It is. It's like, it's very much normalizing this idea of like, it's very normal and okay for your dad to have super strong opinions about who you're fucking and how you come. Like, excuse me?
Yes.
That's like my family, the non-religious side of my family is like that. It's all men and they're all like deeply sexist, and they would deny it if, you know, if they're listening to this, they'd be like, no, I'm not. But it's like, you know, one of my brothers is obsessed with his daughter's sex life. And it's like, leave her alone. She's a grown woman. She has children. Stop it. You know,
it's a mess.
It creeps me out. And my dad was always like that. And like, my mom was like that because she was religious. She is religious. And I'm like, leave me alone.
Which is so bananas because like I have this conversation all the time. Like if you read the Bible, which like I haven't, but I've heard stories, like Jesus spent a lot of time with prostitutes, right? Spent a lot of time with figures like Mary Magdalene, right? It was like, I don't know, the Apostle Paul's sexist bullshit that has infected, right, the last 2000 years of Christianity with this dumb idea that women's bodies are somehow like the source of temptation. I was reading recently and I saw it on TikTok, so I don't know if it's true, but that like the original meaning of modesty, like to dress modestly in the Bible, had nothing to do with sex appeal and everything to do with not flaunting your wealth. That the sin was about not flaunting your money.
So much more sense.
That the sin of lust is like, if you feel your feelings or whatever, like your tits are actually like God's gift to everyone. Like that's not
all of ours
the
are
problem
for sure.
Here. Yeah.
I mean, I also think it would be really fun, like as you say this, like how great would it be to do an action to show up at the Senate with wash tubs and pedicure stuff to say, Jesus washed the feet of Mary Magdalene. Why don't you wash the feet of all of the sex workers here?
Yes.
Just like Jesus would do. Here's an act of Jesus. Wash my feet.
Yeah.
Like I would love it so much. And just don't leave. Just some people, just don't leave. Just come in a spa robe and be like, look, I'm a sex worker. I'm just looking for some Christian. In the words of Jesus, read the passage. What would Jesus do? Well, Jesus would wash my feet and be like, we're hanging out for dinner later. You're not the one that's going to turn me in, are you? No, somebody else.
Really
appreciate this. Like, I'd be into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or at least to use my family as an example, they're not really walking in the footsteps of Christ. They just want to control other people. And it's also like, believe me, I would love to control other people. I would love to force everyone to recycle. I would love to stop everyone from smoking cigarettes. It's none of my fucking business. I don't, you know, and I'm like, but at least I know enough that I'm like, well, that's not, you know, I can do that in my own home. I can ask people that I don't smoke here. But beyond that, it's not my business at all.
I mean, right. I just don't know who's got that kind of time.
No.
You know, I'm just like trying to live my life. And here you are just like all up in people's shit. Well,
it's just, what's so crazy to me is like, you know, you have to imagine, right? Like, you know, reading the Bible and asking yourself the question of like, what would Jesus Christ do? And like seeing past the struggling single moms in your congregation, right? Denying them resources, right? And instead spending your precious time and money trying to prevent other people from either making money or like choosing not to give birth to a child, which is like, I don't know, one of the top 10 most traumatic things that can happen to a person.
I cannot imagine. I mean, just the thing your body goes through. I'm like, no, thank you.
It's so dangerous. Pregnancy is really dangerous.
Yeah, no,
but
sure.
Also, I would also say too, is the construct of, I would like to talk about churches a little bit more the way we talk about Walmart and the destruction of Main Street churches versus the Walmartization of Christianity. Because truth be told, these people in these mega church parishes have very little opportunity to meet that single mom who doesn't have anything. They create this self-contained Christianity where if they go help someone, they go, they all just chip in money and their kids go on a plane and they go, right? Yeah, they go build a well in some town mm-hmm. and they get on the plane. The therapy session is some whatever. There's a youth pastor,
yeah,
their movies, their concerts, their whole shit is in this space. And they get to have an orchestrated worldview and morality that is not based on having to be exposed to stuff.
It's consumptive, right? It's like consumer charity, right? Where it's really more about the experience for the person providing that than it is about the recipient. It's not grounded in ideas of mutual aid. And it's so grounded often in ideas of judgment, right? Where real resources are being spent punishing people or trying to prevent people from doing something that the congregation or the whatever doesn't want, rather than saying like, hey, what do you need?
Yeah, that's the thing. Nobody's ever listening when people say, I need this or we need this. They're like, no, we'll tell you what we need. And what you need is Jesus. And then you need to give to our church and you need to follow our laws and guidelines. And it's like, fuck you.
Right. And you see this, right? Like a really good example is the Earn It Act legislation that's making its way through Congress, which is just sort of an updated version of SESTA FOSTA, which we mentioned earlier in the episode. And the name of that legislation is like Stop Enabling Sex Trafficking, right? And so it's all grounded in like, we want to prevent exploitation. We want to prevent trafficking. We want to help people. And the way that we're going to do that is that we're going to remove all of the tools that people use to help themselves in these communities. Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't matter if you're talking about, you know, an adult consensual sex worker or a trafficking victim, but taking away Backpage made all of those people's lives immediately worse and provided no material support to anyone.
Yeah, and deciding that that it is a blanket thing, that you can just have one piece of legislation around anything, like nobody ever thought to legislate, you know, how to make sex work safer, you know, how to do all of that, right? You know, they think that sex trafficking and sex work are the same,
right? And no one asked a sex worker.
No one ever asks a sex worker,
right?
Like that is just not happening.
Well, and why would you? Why would you? We don't need your input for your own life decisions and your own path.
It would be. If we did, then prices would go up to pay a living wage. And then, you know, again, the economy of who then benefits from sex work the most, where that power dynamic would shift to the worker.
Yep.
You can't have that when, you know, your asshole clients are dumb and rich. They're not dumb enough to know that, like, they're smart enough to know that they're going to do anything in their power to make sure that they're never going to give any rights to workers, no matter what they do.
No, Lady G is not interested in empowering, right, his boy toys. That's not, you know, that's not what Lindsey Graham wants to be doing.
Lindsey does not want that.
Yeah, no.
Also, if you're Lindsey Graham's sex worker, then it is indeed work.
If you're a Lindsey Graham sex worker, please email me directly. I have a lot of projects I'd like to work on.
Also, I'll just buy you lunch. And do you need a massage? Yeah. Like, what do you need? Because I feel like after a hard day of Lindsey, you probably need some self-care that you maybe are not giving yourself. Yeah. I just want to make sure
that's whose feet should be washed. They should be 100%.
100%. Yeah.
Oh man.
It's so frustrating to know, and this doesn't affect me directly, but affects me as a woman in society. It's frustrating to no end to know that the more sex work and reproductive rights are neglected or seen as like some weird fringe gross thing, or like it's bad or whatever, and the more regulation there is around that, as far as like making things illegal, the more dangerous it is for everyone involved. And it's like you're killing women.
100%. And I think this is a direct and deep tie to the reproductive justice movement, right? Because the tools that are used to police and surveil and crack down sex work, right, are the same tools that are going to be used to surveil and criminalize and remove access to information about abortion and reproductive health care, right? If you are, like, again, if you are a feminist or if you are a person who sees a future where abortion is criminalized as dangerous, then you do not want to be fighting for legislation like the Earn It Act, which is going to make it impossible, right, for a now criminalized class of abortion providers to be sharing information with each other on the internet. And this long conflation, right, again, back to Comstock, right, the same guy after the Civil War, titties aren't an emergency, passed a federal law, right, raised all kinds of hell, single-handedly delayed access to the abortion, to the birth control pill in this country by decades, right? We just keep, like, those dudes are still in Congress, right? And so the criminalization of prostitution, the criminalization of like women's bodies that make them feel a certain way, is directly going to go to censoring, making it harder to access, and criminalizing access to just information about abortion, reproductive health care. And like, if you can't see that, then please let me give you a PowerPoint.
Well, also let me just weigh in to say that there's a trend happening in the US, you know, there's the abortion laws that make the news. And then there's these trends that nobody knows. And Oklahoma was the fifth state. And hear me on this, the fifth state. You haven't heard about the other four. But they are proposing a law where if you want an abortion, you have to call a state-run hotline that is run by not necessarily a medical worker, but somebody from your local fake crisis pregnancy clinic. They will and the purpose of you calling this counselor, and I'm air quoting all over the place for those of you who can't see me, is for them to dissuade you out of your abortion. Not done yet. Not done yet. Not only do you have to call this line, they give you, and tell me if this sounds sus, a unique identifying number.
I'm screaming in sex worker right now. Yeah.
Yes. That the government files away and that you have to bring to your appointment to the clinic so that they know that you've gone through the counseling. Now, for those of you who are not techies and not all this stuff, because the United States government or these fake clinics are not licensed medical facilities, any information you give them is not protected by HIPAA, which is the law that protects your medical. So what that does is they can ask for all the information you want. If they're crafty enough to fool you into thinking you are protected, you could be giving a lot of information away. If at any point you have to go to a place with your cell phone, there's something called geofencing where they can track you. And there are states where they have been able to track your phone. And somebody who went to a fake clinic and said that they were thinking of abortion and left there has had their phone tracked to the clinic when they had the abortion. So when they are waiting in the waiting room, they got a text from that fake clinic that says, "Don't murder your baby today."
Okay.
This is where we are at.
We take it from, and I can't overstate this, generations of sex workers that you do not want to be on any stigmatized lists, right? No. Thinking about like the vigilante angle of this, right? Because like we're not protecting that data, right? Those lists of who got an abortion are going to be available to your neighbors, right? Imagine like, you know, the $10,000 thing in Texas being applied if people can just Google, right? Who this happened to say nothing of child custody cases, like
employment.
There are 1,001 ways.
Like housing, you can't buy a house because we just looked at your thing and you're a person of ill repute.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I mean, yeah. So it's these things are, the parallels are there. It's all there. They're all trying to lay it out. And it's very, it feels really scary. And it feels like begging and shouting just on the abortion front, right? The amount that we all know how much it's happening. It's, you know, aside from guns, you know, it's the number one most legislated thing that happens in state legislatures. And the national media reported on it last year, 0.3% of the time.
It
probably will go up slightly this year because of Texas and because Roe is going away. Mm-hmm. But it's never about talking about these things as they happen and what could be, so that you have an opportunity to stop it in its tracks, make your voice heard as a citizen. It's always just something, this is on fire. And now I'm going to cover it for ratings, you know?
I'm sure that you've had this experience because you've been doing this work for a long time, but like, I just remember the years and years that I spent as an abortion rights advocate being told that my fears around Roe being overturned were like hysterical, right?
Yes,
like,
gaslighting.
The number of dinners of just like sitting across from people being like, we're going to lose Roe, and being like, you sound like a crazy person. And now that it's happening, those same people being like, ah, it's math, 6 is more than 3. And it's like, I'm going to flip this table over.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. I mean, and that's what it's been always. It's like, it's you're imagining it. It's settled law. No one's going to change it. It's going to be fine. It's like, you have no idea how anything works. And,
right?
And you've been talking and blabbing on and on and on and on. You've never voted in a midterm election. You have no idea actually what state governance is like, mm-hmm. the power city councils have, like all of this shit and how these laws lay out. Who's on your circuit court? Do you even know what circuit court you live in? Yeah. No. So you should just shut the fuck up because it's free.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Exactly.
Grown folks are talking.
Yeah, it is. And it's also there. They say that as though laws haven't been overturned in the past. It's like, that's part of American history. Like, did we not have prohibition and then go back to not having prohibition? It's not, it's so ignorant to think that things can't backslide. And then that's, I feel like, how we get to where we are now, because people kind of fall asleep and they're like, whatever, everything's taken care of. I don't need to do anything.
I feel like all roads lead to white supremacy on this. We've just been really married to this false narrative of history that we're somehow on this inevitable progressive march forward, right? Like, mm-hmm. I remember just the way that I was taught of like, you know, democracy built on what the Greeks did. And we said all men and we didn't mean it, but eventually we're just getting better and better as a culture and a community. Look, we have clean water now, or like, you know, whatever. And, you know, as a student of history and as someone who has specifically dived deeply into sex work history of like, yeah, we backslide on rights, especially for women, especially for stigmatized, subcultures, like all the time. Mm-hmm. All the time. We have, you know, Mary Wollstonecraft had more rights and more freedom of movement than her daughter, Mary Shelley, right? Like, this mm-hmm. isn't going to be the first generation of women where our daughters have fewer rights than we do. And I think that like, the least we can do is stop acting surprised.
Yeah. And the whole thing is, for me, like, first of all, patriarchy doesn't take a holiday. What the fuck is wrong with you? Second of all, you're surprised because a lot of it is because you abdicated actually caring, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that is, for me, like, I really struggle a lot with, I know that there's not information out there, so I grant people a pass who care, but mm-hmm. it's when I give you the information, what you decide to do with it is I do make judgment, but I also feel like too, when I hear things like, wow, this is real. You guys are really in a pickle with all this stuff that's going on. I'm like, well, where are you in this?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I mean, have you ever once talked to a cis dude
right.
who paid for the birth control in their relationship? Never. You know what I mean? Like, economically, you have benefited from birth control and abortion so profoundly, you know, that right. it's unbelievable. And where are you? You're like, I don't know what to do because I've been told for so long to shut up. It's like, you can still shut up, but give us money and show up with your yeah. with yourself. Show yeah. up.
And yeah,
I mean, I think we can all agree here that the biggest civil rights issue facing our time is that like Joe Rogan had to remove some podcasts from the internet, I think, or whatever.
Oh, really? Truly devastating.
Yeah, no, you talk to cis dudes and they like really care about censorship, but not any of the actual censorship that is actually happening.
Yes.
Yeah. And don't understand censorship.
Correct. Completely. Right,
you know, it goes back to that marketplace of ideas thing. It's like, oh, I'm sorry. You know, nobody wants to buy fucking hot dogs stuffed with chili anymore. It's out. Nobody likes it. It's stupid. And that's what you're still selling? That's not my problem. marketplace of ideas. And you know what? The marketplace now all has an advertising tool called social media and gets to weigh in. So unless your idea is, and you can defend your idea and your idea, you can get that going. I'm sorry if people don't like it, because I firmly believe that the Joe Rogans of the world and the ones that keep whining that, you know, it seems like they're being canceled in a way that keeps a microphone going and you get paid more money. It's like, maybe I don't understand what canceling is.
Right. But yeah.
I think they're just mad that people who are interesting no longer like them. Like you developed a fan base. You're very famous. You got a lot of followers. People throw money at you. You sell out your shows. And within your shows are just the rancid garbage of humanity.
Yes.
And
absolutely.
You did that.
Not a fun hang.
Yeah.
You did that.
Yes.
We didn't do that. You did that. So why don't you just enjoy them? Throw the slop out onto the sty and let them up all your comedy.
Yeah. And just make your money and go away.
And just make your money and go away.
Yeah.
No one's we've canceled you only because we don't want to hang around with you anymore. Yeah. And I really never did.
No shit.
And like withdrawing consent is not the same as being censored. See, it really all does come full circle, right? They just don't want really us to be able to say, no, I don't want to listen to that anymore. Thank you.
Yeah. And by the way, I know you, and I don't think you're going to want to listen to it either. So I'm just going to give you some information about what I know about what's happening over there.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, I could talk to you both all day. I love this so much.
So much fun.
Thank you so much for being on here. But I'm gonna wrap it so you can, you know, go on with your day.
Thank you so much. This has been great.
Can you let people know where to find you and where to fight the good fight?
Sure. You can, please follow the work that we're doing at Old Pros at Old Pros Online. Our website is oldprosonline.org. All of our social media handles, it's all Old Pros Online. And join our newsletter. We send up a roundup of sex worker rights related news from around the country every Friday. So, yeah.
That is awesome. And follow Abortion Access Front at Abortion Front is our handle. AAfront.org is our website. And every Thursday we do a show that is a roundup of all of the weekly reproductive rights and health and justice news called Feminist Buzzkills Live on YouTube at 4 p.m. And I'm Liz Winstead, and you can find me on all the socials at my name.
Thanks so much. All right. I will talk to you both soon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I hope you enjoyed listening as much as I enjoyed recording that. Once again, that was Liz Winstead and Caitlin Bailey. You can find Liz on Twitter and Instagram at Liz Winstead. It's Liz with two Z's. And you can find her organization, Abortion Access Front, on Twitter and Instagram at Abortion Front. And Caitlin Bailey can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Caitlin Bailey. And you can find her podcast, The Oldest Profession, at Old Pros Online, also on Twitter and Instagram. And finally, I am Lisa Curry. You can find me on Twitter at Lisa_Curry and on Instagram and everywhere else at Olympian Lisa Curry. Regular episodes of Long Story Long will be airing right here on She's So Funny every Thursday at noon and 8 p.m. Eastern. And I will see you there. Bye.